www.cdc.ca.
Listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. After receiving a tie vote at Planning Committee, a 40-room development at 92 Napier Road came before Council with no recommendation, leaving Council to debate the matter at their meeting on Tuesday, August 12th. The proposal, brought forward by Amber Peak Developments, calls for the construction of four 10-bedroom buildings at 92 Napier Road, a development that would mostly be marketed towards students. To make this possible, Amber Peak is seeking both an official plan amendment and a zoning bylaw amendment to rezone the site from general open space to urban residential space. The suggestion triggered a strong community response. Many residents spoke at last month's planning committee meeting, voicing opposition to the project. A petition opposing the development garnered 332 signatures. Opponents argued that allowing high-density student housing in the quiet, family-oriented neighborhood could lead to increased noise, heavier traffic, and contribute to existing residents relocating, many of whom work in local businesses, the nearby hospital, and educational institutions. Councillor Vincent Shinani, who sits on Planning Committee, described the meeting.
At Planning Committee, it was divisive in a way. For me, rezoning from open space to anything else, it would have to be a really good reason. It had to be a really good benefit to the community. And I don't think that this is it. Living where I live, you see like what happens with this type of housing, moving further and further west. It just drives everyone away, and then it becomes like families move away, there's schools nearby. It just totally changes the character of the neighborhood. And I think that moving forward, having spoken to a lot of the community members, there's a lot more support in density near the university versus moving further and further west.
For councillors like Shinani, who are opposed, the core concern was that the development would introduce student housing into one of the last streets in the area that is not student-focused. The proposal's potential rent, estimated at around $1,000 per bedroom, also heightened concerns. Councillor Connie Glenn summarized these fears before council.
So let's be honest about what we're turning this into, and we are putting this, we're making this into a student ghetto. It's one of the last pockets where there's a family, where there's family-oriented housing. People walk their kids to school. Neighbors know each other's names. It's a community built on long-term relationships. I'm certainly not anti-student, as everyone I think is aware, but it brings a different rhythm to the area. It's late night turnover, noise complaints, short-term occupancy. It's a dynamic that's already saturating so much of the district. And so if we want families to live downtown, work downtown, then we need to make sure that we're providing space for them. And it's not about blaming students. It's also about providing balance. And it's not good for students either. Students are a vital part of our city, and they contribute a lot to it, but they can't afford what's being offered for the most part. And we heard at Planning Committee that these units, these bedrooms, I should say, would be $1,000 a piece. There'll be 40 students minimum here. That's $40,000 coming out of this. That's about profit. Now, I'm not above making a profit. I own a business. But We need a better vision for our city, and this isn't it. Students need safe, affordable housing, and they don't need to be in overpriced apartments in neighborhoods where they're going to have tensions with the permanent residents that are there.
Another key consideration for councillors was the risk of appeal to the Ontario Land Tribunal if the proposal was rejected. Mayor Patterson acknowledged the likelihood that the city would lose such an appeal.
I've never said this before, but I'll just say we have a 100% chance of losing at the OLT, not even like a 95% chance, a 100% chance of losing. And quite frankly, I think the way that that would look, I think is terrible.
Councillor Gary Osteroff, who was against the development, noted the difficult position this potential outcome puts council in.
We're handcuffed. I don't know. I don't think we should be spending the money to fight it. We know we're going to lose it. And so, you know, it's us to deal with the province. So I'm speechless.
Both Mayor Patterson and Councillor Ryan Boehm expressed confusion at the intensity of the opposition, noting that new housing is a top city priority.
I'm a bit stunned, actually, by the discussion around the table today. We've put policies in place. We have a development application that meets those policies. And now we would go to the OLT and argue against the very policies that we put in place for the housing. I appreciate where the community is coming from. I don't want to minimize that in any way. Obviously, you know, we're trying to find a compromise, leave some green space there, allow some sustainability for the Lawn Bowling Club to continue. But quite frankly, we've also tried to push towards more integrated neighborhoods and not put all of the student housing, lump it in one area of the city as well. So I'm a bit exasperated, to be honest, by the discussion around the table. But obviously, I would encourage council to be consistent with the direction that we've taken as a council up until now, which is to say housing is a priority. All housing matters.
Let's no longer be the roadblock to getting more housing built. Because if in the end, this does, for whatever reason, end up the specter of the OLT there, we will lose. But all we've done then is increase the costs, spend a bunch more money, and wasted a lot of effort, and delayed the incoming supply of housing units that we so badly need. And to be honest, we're asking for. It's like we're our own worst enemy at times. We ask for something, somebody offers it, and then we go, well, yeah, no, but not really like that. We want something different here. And if we do that for every housing development, somebody needs to explain to me why we even have an official plan.
Ultimately, council voted 7-6 against approving the required official plan and zoning bylaw amendments, halting the development for the time being. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and this is part 10 of our ongoing OUA football season preview. Today, we're looking at the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks. The Laurier Golden Hawks rode their trailblazing quarterback to an incredible 8-0 conference record in 2024. Taylor Elgersma and wide receiver Ethan Jordan helped carry Laurier to the Vanier Cup, where they came up agonizingly short against the Laval Rouge et Or. With both Jordan in the CFL and Elgersma in the NFL moving on to greener pastures, Laurier will need their next men up to show up and show out in 2025. I do think they have the pieces necessary to avoid a total title hangover, but I don't know if they'll reach the staggering highs they did in 2024. Look for running back Tayshawn Jackson to have another stellar all-purpose season as both a backfield ball carrier and a special teams menace. I think wide receiver Raiden Thorne will step up to become Laurier's top target, but for the first time in 4 years, their question mark is at quarterback. Who will step up and take the baton from the recently departed Elgersma? If they get another gem under center, this team could easily win 6 or 7 games. If their quarterback regresses to the mean, I think 5 wins is a realistic expectation. I think Laurier loses to this year's Big Three of Queens, Western, and Guelph, but I think they'll clean up against Windsor, the Ottawa teams, Toronto, and Waterloo. I think they slot nicely into the 4 spot as the best of the rest in the OUA this season. That's a wrap for today's sports report, but do tune in on Friday, August 22nd at 8 p.m. for a special half-hour season preview focusing on your Queens Gaels ahead of their Saturday home game against the Western Mustangs.
I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your arts and culture updates for Kingston and the area. All summer long, downtown Kingston has been running Movies in the Square on Thursday evenings. They've played a range of films from Little Women to Talladega Nights, and now, as we near the summer's end, there are just two more screenings. Tomorrow night, Thursday, August 21st, you can see Inside Out 2 starting at dusk in Springer Market Square. And the final movie in the square for the 2025 season will be The Wild Robot on Thursday, August 28th. In other arts news, this weekend, the Kingston Blues Society tribute to the Limestone City Blues Festival is running for its second year, with over 20 participating blues bands and performers. From Thursday, August 21st to Saturday, August 23rd, you can catch performances at the RCHA, Confederation Park, and Tiernan Oak. There are a mix of ticketed and free shows thanks to the downtown Kingston Business Improvement Area. To name just a few, you can catch Hellhound Trail Blues Band, Soulfire, Sarah Sokol, Big Mo and the Blues Mission, Doghouse Kings, and many more. To see the full Kingston Blues Society Tribute Weekend schedule and to find ticket information, head to kingstonbluessociety.ca. And the final update for the day is about the Robert Bruce Memorial Parking Garage Public Art Project. Earlier this summer, artists from Kingston and the surrounding area were invited to participate in a two-stage open call to develop artwork for the exterior of the Robert Bruce Memorial Parking Garage. The site for the artwork faces onto Bagot Street, a busy streetscape, and the downtown transfer point for Kingston Transit. Four Kingston-based artists were shortlisted by the selection panel and were invited to submit a detailed public art proposal for the site. These proposals were then shared with the public, who had the opportunity to provide feedback and opinions on which should be chosen. After reviewing public feedback, the selection panel chose Abby Gowland's Kingston in Motion. The survey results showed that respondents appreciated the inclusivity and diverse representation and the depiction of real-life elements and connection to the community. The mural is expected to go up fall 2025, but if you'd like to take a look at the proposal, you can visit the City of Kingston's website and view the Robert Bruce Memorial Parking Garage public art page. If you'd like to hear more about local arts and culture events, check out the Kingston Curator on CFRC 101.9 FM on Fridays at 3 with me, Ellie Sturton. And that's all the art news for now.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Monday, August 18th, daytime high of 22 degrees and a pretty pleasant sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Low humidity and a medium UV index of 7, perfect late summer day. Tuesday, August 19th, occasional morning rain and drizzle. Otherwise, it's going to be sunny in the afternoon, daytime high of 23, feeling closer to 24. Wednesday, August 20th, breezy in the morning and cloudy throughout the day, daytime high of 21, feeling closer to 20. Thursday, August 21st, it's going to be a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Breezy in the morning, a little bit of cloud, but mostly brilliant sunshine. High of 25, that actually feels like 25. Friday, August 22nd, daytime high of 24 with lots of sun in the forecast. Saturday, August 23rd, it's looking like it's going to be a perfect day for the Queens football home opener against the Western Mustangs. Daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 27. A slight possibility of rain later in the afternoon, but it should be a beautiful summer Saturday. Sunday, August 24th, mostly cloudy with the possibility of a thunderstorm here in the Kingston region. Daytime high of 24, feeling closer to 25. And to kick off next week, Monday, August 25th, daytime high of 22, 70% chance of rain. Otherwise, sunny throughout the day. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel on Sunday, August 24th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed $1,000 for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Rosanna to Holden, is closed until August 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for roundabout upgrades. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Middle Road, Joyceville to Highway 2, is closed until August 22nd from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to complete culvert relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Woodburn Road, Hitchcock to Whitechurch, is closed for a contractor to complete culvert relining. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Wednesday, it's Games in the Square from 6 to 8 p.m. Drop by Springer Market Square to play Giant Snakes and Ladders, Connect Four, Chess, Cornhole, and more. Or bring your own favorite game. It's free and family-friendly. On Thursday, Stories in the Square begins at 10:30 a.m. in the City Hall Amphitheater with stories, songs, and fun from the Kingston Frontenac Public Library. If the weather turns bad, it moves indoors to the Central Branch. In the evening, Life Drawing at Art Noise runs from 6 to 8 p.m., giving artists of all skill levels a chance to practice with a live model for just $10. And Stories in the Square presents Inside Out 2 at dusk in Springer Market Square. Bring your own lawn chair and enjoy this free outdoor screening under the stars. On Friday, The Loaf and Ale hosts Music Trivia with Terry from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Test your musical knowledge, enjoy a drink, and spend a fun night out with friends. On Saturday, head to Springer Market Square from 11 a.m. to noon for a chef demo by Olivea. Watch a locally inspired dish come together and sample it afterwards for just $2. Then from 1 to 3 p.m., the Adult Hide and Seek fundraiser takes place starting at City Hall. Teams of five compete within set boundaries to raise funds for the Friends of the Kingston Frontenac Public Library. Registration details are available by emailing ygktrivia@gmail.com. And on Sunday, Yoga in the Park runs from 10 to 11 a.m. in Battery Park. It's a free outdoor session led by a local instructor, so bring your own mat and enjoy the waterfront vibes. Later, the Brock Street Street Party runs from noon to 4 p.m., closing the street from King to Wellington. There will be exclusive shopping, a wandering bar, free samples, games, live music, and more. It's free and open to all ages. Have a community event you would like shared on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Hey folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your live music events happening around town this week. On Wednesday at Springer Market Square, Swingin' Summer continues from 7 to 8 p.m. with the Dixie Six in a free outdoor jazz concert. At the Broom Factory, fingerstyle guitar master Alexandra Misko performs from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Tickets are $35 for early birds or $43 for general admission. On Thursday, the Brownman Electric Trio plays the Cove Inn from 6 to 9 p.m. with a high-energy mix of funk, hip-hop, soul, and jazz for a $10 cover. The Kingston Blues Society Tribute Weekend opens at the RCHA from 7 to 11 p.m. with four back-to-back acts and tickets just over $22. Tiernanogue also features blues from 8 to 11 p.m. with Timothy Campbell, Tony Vanney, and Kenny Paws, and Matt Smith for $10. And Daft Brewing hosts Queerioki from 8 to 11 p.m. for just $5, welcoming the LGBTQ+ community and allies. On Friday, Time Out Bar and Bistro has Scott and Kate playing from 3 to 5:30 p.m., then Wild Card at 6 p.m. The Furball Cruise sails from 6 to 8 p.m. with live music from our band aboard Rockport Boat Lines. Raising funds for the Gananoque District Humane Society, tickets are just $33. At 7 p.m., Kickin' It Country brings Chelsea Road to Springer Market Square with free line dancing starting at 6. The Blues Society continues at the RCHA with Big Mo and the Blues Mission, followed by Angelique Francis. Tickets are just over $33. And at Base 31, Rock the Country opens with I Mother Earth at 7:30 p.m., with tickets ranging from $65 to $268. Folks can finish the night at Tiernanogue with the J Blues Trio and Jeff Dunn from 8 p.m. to midnight for just $10. On Saturday, Tiernanogue hosts Sarah Sokol and Sonia Bergen from 10 a.m. to noon for a $10 admission. At Sydenham and Princess, see Panache A Play for a family-friendly set with puppets from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday sessions at Confederation Park run from noon to 6 p.m. with a free tribute to the Limestone City Blues Festival. Folks can see Night Sun perform at Leopard Frog Farm from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. with tickets for $30. Juniper Cafe hosts summer live music from 4 to 6 p.m. alongside artist Sydney Cox from Heartspire doing live sketching. The Kingston Blues Society Tribute Weekend wraps up at the RCHA with Blue Sill and the Sweet Home Band, joined by Chicago Blues Hall of Famer Maurice John Vaughn from 7 to 11 p.m. Tickets are just $39. And Rock the County closes with Big Wreck at 7:30 p.m. at Base 31. Tickets range from $65 to $268. And don't miss the Garvin Brothers performing free at Joel Stone Heritage Park at 7:30 p.m. On Sunday, live music Sundays at Finkel's Shore Park run from 2 to 5 p.m. with live sets from Mellow Lily, John McClurg, and Frank Ryan. Then at 3 p.m., catch Christopher Jackson, Wayne Riley, and John McClurg in a free show at Time Out Bar and Bistro. Finally, at Hotel Wolf Island from 3:30 to 6 p.m., Deborah Shermans and Jazzy perform evocative piano compositions and dreamy indie pop. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present David Yee, a.k.a. Wolf and Sheep Clothing's latest track, Redefine. The new song began as a guitar-focused composition but gradually drew increasing inspiration from classical music. The piece features Massimo Amodio, a third-year cellist at Queen's University, whose performance includes a melody that listeners familiar with classical repertoire may recognize. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Redefined by Sheep and Wolf's Clothing on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. Kingston, watering your garden or washing your car? Take note, summer watering restrictions are now in effect until September 15th. You can use water outside only on designated days based on your address number. Odd-numbered houses water on odd days, even-numbered houses on even days. On your day, use a hose or bucket anytime, but limit sprinkler use to between 5 and 10 a.m. Got a rain barrel? Great, you can use that water anytime, any day. By using water wisely, you're helping protect the local water supply and the environment. Visit utilitieskingston.com to learn more, and let's make every drop count.
Mondays can be a tough day, but would you like something to brighten up your Monday afternoon? Well, tune in to my show, Dark Glasses, on CFRC 101.9. My name's Daniel Wolf, and the show is now in its 14th year with a mixture of mainly jazz, but also blues, folk, some pop, even retro pop, and the occasional interview. So that's Dark Glasses, Mondays at 2 p.m.
The Corridor is an award-winning news program hosted by Dinah Jansen and Jesse Bell, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. With contributions from local Journalism Initiative reporters ranging from Morrisburg to Coburg, The Corridor is your premier destination for truly local news that matters to you. The Corridor is also available as a podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms.
Swing, swang, swung. It's 2 hours of jazz, jump, bop, blues, fusion, funk. I'll play it all as long as it swings. So check us out every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Jazz is an American classic, and therefore we present it as such, without tricks and without nonsense and without funny hats and funny hair.
Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Arrow McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Labs program. They'll share their stories, their insights, maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
Welcome to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. This week, we will be presenting part one of a conversation that happened during this summer's Skeleton Park Arts Festival. As part of their programming, they offered a panel workshop called From Page to Stage, Voicing Your Verse, facilitated by Word Labs' Aaron McCauley and featuring Skeleton Park Arts Festival headliner Cadence Weapon, also known as Rolly Pemberton, former Edmonton Poet Laureate, Kingston's current Poet Laureate, Sadiqa DeMeyer, and local vocalist, poet, and spoken word artist, Jay Marsh, a.k.a. Jermaine Marshall. In this panel, all three artists discussed how they develop and use their verse, from writing poems to developing lyrics and flowing between genres. This free event encouraged everyone with a creative spark to get writing without worrying about doing it wrong.
So great to have everyone here today, including a wonderful community that has come out to be a part of this discussion with us. Claps for the community! So let's just dive right in. I had sent a bunch of questions. We can follow them, we can not follow them, you know, wherever we want to go with this. But I always like asking this question around what we talk about and why. You know, we're all creatives, we're all picking things to have discussions about through our art, through our mediums. Why do you pick the things that matter enough that you feel, I gotta talk about this in this stage, on this medium, in this way, and not just, oh, I'm gonna think about this, but I'm not gonna talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily decide what I'm gonna work on. It's just kind of what ends up in the atmosphere around me and the things that I'm just interested in, but I won't be like, today I'm gonna make a political song. Like, it doesn't really work like that. But it's really just like an accumulation of little ideas here and there, like it's kind of magpie style, and eventually it comes together, and then it's like, oh, this song is about government surveillance. You know.
So the process isn't necessarily defined as you're going through it. It's kind of when it clicks that it clicks.
Yeah, it's like, well, the way my part of my process is, I'll just like write down little notes on my phone a lot, and I'll kind of have them in different places where it's like, okay, a lot of these are maybe around like one particular theme, and it's just things that come to my mind, and like once I notice that it's somewhat substantial, I'm like, okay, let me like see if I can put these ideas together.
Mm-hmm. I see. So Sadiqa, how do you start curating for creation?
I think we're on a similar page. I use a notebook, not a phone, but other than that, with masking tape tabs for the themes. Yeah, I do believe, like, I don't think we choose our material. I think it comes, and it's the subjects that sort of preoccupy us, keep coming back. And I do, like, if I've made a conscious choice to write about something, it usually goes wrong, because I feel like what's actually in there that wants to come out, it'll tell you, and it'll be like, I'm not part of it yet, so bring me in. So I don't spend too much time considering what am I going to write about. It just is. It's clear, it's there, it's the things you're always thinking about.
So oftentimes I think back to one of my earliest poems, just again, kid, that moment where I was like, oh, I'm really upset about this thing that just happened, and so I want to write about this thing that just happened in this form of writing that I've just started to learn about in high school. It's like, oh, I like how the words are aligned here. And I find that with my creative process, oftentimes it's the things that people don't want to talk about, that's what tends to hook my attention. Because since I was a kid, I was like in, you know, Jamaica, queer kid, realizing that, oh, I want to ask these questions, but people don't want to talk about it. But I want to talk about it. So that's where I find a lot of how my process starts is, what is it that I want to talk about that people don't want to talk about?
Oh,
that's so let me make a way that like I can talk about it and kind of compel them into the conversation as an audience.
But then there are like decisions about privacy or like safety, all those, you have to weigh things about that, right?
That's interesting. I feel like anytime in my process, when I come up against something and I write something down or say something, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I should say that, or it's, I think I've gone too far, or like, oh, I have like a weird feeling about it. Now it's really important for me to lean into that feeling, and that means I've found some kind of fertile territory. Like there's something kind of uneasy, something that's like makes me question it, that might make other people question it and think about it. So I'm like, okay, this is the way I need to go, you know?
Like the discomfort is a signal to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's part of the function of your art to make people uncomfortable. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
That sounded
a little suspect.
Yeah, like in a way, like I think it's really just about different perspectives and seeing things from different angles. And I do want to help other people see the world differently and maybe see outside of themselves a little bit. So if in that process people feel uncomfortable, then that, I guess, but that's is, what I'm trying is, to
isn't
do.
Isn't that process an inherently uncomfortable process because we're comfortable in ourselves? So it's...
Are we?
Are you? Actually, you know what? That's a good question.
Because I don't know. I don't think I always am.
We're complacent in ourselves, and we read that complacency as comfort.
Sure.
Does that work? I get what you get. What you're saying.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people in that complacency, when you know, especially in your work talking about immigration, and I know when you wrote about that, this is Alphabet, kind of that journey being in that liminal space. Not everybody is comfortable being in that liminal space of language or just of identity, but. Tell us about Alphabet, that piece of work of yours, and maybe how it relates to this idea of our art asking people to experience the world outside of themselves.
Okay. That's a book I wrote, Alphabet, which is about my transition from speaking Dutch to English, which I made I was about 12 years old when we moved here. And so leaving one language behind and adopting another, and what did that feel like? Which actually, interestingly, is not... Like 20% of Canadians are in that same boat. So it's not actually that much of a minority experience that they don't speak French or English or an indigenous language as their first language. So I found not so much that people are reading it and thinking, oh, I've never thought of that before, but more like, oh yeah, that happened to me, or my parents or my grandparents, spoke a different language. I'm thinking of, you know, there's this quote about writing that is misattributed all the time, so I won't even try to say who said it, but it's like writing should disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed. Have you? So like that has this dual valency depending who's reading.
Can you say that one more time?
Listening. Writing should disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed.
So speaking of disturbing the comfortable and comforting the disturbed, when I was growing up, you know, and I grew up in the church, so all that rap music, oh Lord, that hippity hop, you know, Satan's Jives was oftentimes seen as negative, seen as something that was disturbing the comfortable. And that's a medium that you sometimes use, you're known for dabbling in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Why did you pick it?
Well, I feel like it picked me, you know, I mean, it was just, I was born to rap. It's like my dad was a radio DJ, he played radio, he was one of the first people to introduce hip-hop music to Edmonton, where I'm originally from, so he had a radio show called The Black Experience and Sound, and he had it for over 20 years on the radio there, so I kind of grew up in a library of music, and particularly rap was just always around me, right, so it seems pretty natural that I would get into it, but it was just something I always found it really interesting how the different rappers, they all had different voices, different ways of flowing, different, it was like their handwriting.
Yeah. creative identity.
I felt like I would hear songs where people would talk about things that you didn't hear in other kinds of music or in other art forms, really. You know, talk about politics or talk about like socio-political things, and that really excited me a lot. Like a lot of the underground rap, which maybe is not as objectionable as some of the more mainstream stuff. That's really what I grew up on.
It's interesting. I find that oftentimes when I was growing up and I'd have conversations with people that like the song, and like, oh, this song is so great, and the messaging, and like, what do you mean about the messaging? It's just nice to listen to it. And I'm like, oh, okay, so there are a lot of times where people are engaging at different levels of the medium that's and just the content that's sort of being sent to them. And I think that's, you know, growing up in the Caribbean, reggae is another really big socially conscious commentary while also sounding very good. It's entertaining. But I was talking to a friend of mine about how part of the colonial machine is it locks the music into just being entertaining. And so if you're trying to like say, oh no, there's more to this, it's like, well no, the curtains are just blue, it's just for entertainment, it's just this one thing.
Yeah, you know, you can, it's unfortunate, but it's like, you can't control it, right? And I feel like I do what I can to try and make things that are appealing on multiple levels, like as many as, like, you know, I'm really into double and triple entendres and lyrics, and like I'm just trying to make things for just different people to cue into. Like some people are really super lyrical, some people like want it as a body experience, like it's just purely physical. So I try and have a balance as much as I can, but I can't control the societal factors that make people assume that you make rap so it's more like for driving in your car.
So here's a question, I guess. Oh, sorry, were you about to say something? No, I call it my teacher eyes on, which is like, if anybody's shoulder moves to my left, I'm just like, is that a hand? Is that a hand over there?
Okay, I could share something that, maybe is on
the I saw it.
Okay, something I wrote about fairly recently was the work of the visual artist Surinder Dhaliwal. So she had a show with the AGR retrospective, and I was thinking about the role of beauty in her work, because it's very beautiful. It's very colorful and charismatic and sort of appealing, and you want to get closer to it. But, you know, this is a thought that I borrowed and continued from another artist, Rajni Ferreira, who wrote about her work. And she talks about how that beauty works on different levels depending on who's looking. So, because actually what's also embedded in the works is like an anti-colonial critique, and it's all about the consequences of particularly like India's partition and the diaspora that arose from that. So if you're looking at it and you don't know that history, the beauty is pulling you in. It's like, and then you learn. Then you learn the history, you learn the consequences of these things that maybe your own people did, right? But if you're looking...
The beauty that pulls you in challenges your whole idea of beauty.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, but it's the spoonful of sugar, I don't know, like it helps, right? But the same work, you're standing in front of it, and maybe that is your experience, you are that diasporic group, then the beauty is like a balm, like it's medicine for you, you know, because you're seeing this trauma history embedded, like almost transmuted through the beauty. But it's the same work. And so I don't know if that's part of what you're saying, like that those layers, it depends who's looking, but it can be the same work having very different effects.
Very much so. Totally.
And I think medicine is something that can hurt as it heals. I think that's something that people, I as I've gotten into, you know, football or soccer, I have to call it both depending on who I'm talking to and which country I am in. I said soccer once in Jamaica when I was back a few weeks ago, and they did not respond well. But as I started playing that, I've been thinking a lot more about this idea of as your body goes through that, those physical activities, it may hurt, it may get sore, but it is building itself. I think sometimes in the age of comfort, people think discomfort is a negative inherently, as opposed to this perspective that draws me in with its beauty, but it's also causing me to feel uncomfortable about the things I used to like. It's causing me a certain level of distress. This is still medicine, because, you know, what was it that Winston on New Girl said? Oh, you're like rubbing alcohol. You sting me in the now, but you help me in the later.
Yeah, I was going to say, you ever have Buckley's before?
I have grown to love the taste of Buckley's.
I think it's kind of nasty at first, but it works.
It works. Listen, nothing works better than Buckley's.
There we go.
And it tastes like it works.
Yes, it definitely, it tastes like it works.
And it looks like, it looks strong too, like, it looks like tar. I remember seeing it on a spoon as a kid and being like, is this oil, is this medicine oil, mother?
So to write a poem like Buckley's, that's what we want.
So I did want to say that, you know, because our audience is here with us this afternoon, I wanted to pause midway to see if maybe there were any questions percolating in their minds based on the conversation so far. Remember, questions end with a question mark. you can still make a comment if you just wanted to make a comment, but if you say it's a question mark, people, we are literary folks this afternoon. But any questions? Anyone wanna?
I do have one. I was curious about...
Identify yourself first. You know who we are. Who are you?
I've got a habit of making friends and then introducing myself. I'm Megan. I'm not really officially in the art space, but my question is about your discussion on aesthetics is interesting to me because people seem to put aesthetics as just a visual experience, and really it's much more somatic than that. Like, being drawn in is more than just seeing, you know? So I was just wondering kind of how you deal with a society which might think of art as like a surface level, like aesthetic layer, when really the aesthetics of art is more beyond that. So I was just wondering like how you reckon with a society that might see art as a commodity when really you're working with art as perhaps an experience.
I'm just trying to marinate on that. I think for me, I deal with that with world building, I think. I do a lot of stuff outside of just the art, just the music, to inform what I'm doing. So it isn't just like you come to the album and it's like, oh, this person just makes music or whatever. It's just like elevator music or whatever. And there's all this other stuff that kind of, I write a newsletter that I email people, and I'll write essays about the individual songs and kind of talk. I'll even include like a syllabus of like things I read or watched or whatever that influenced me. And then it's kind of, it informs people so much on just the overarching idea around music. So I just try and do that as much as I can with any of my projects.
One of the things that you said that really jumped out to me is I oftentimes think of music, which is an art, which is storytelling, as an educational process, but I'm oftentimes surprised at the ways in which people who do it don't add that intentional pedagogical educational lens and framing to it. So again, it's kind of like, oh no, here's the art, figure it out. And I'm like, well, no, you're dealing with a global audience. People are going to come into it at different points in time. There's a reason why people love to look up, like, well, what did the creator think? What is their saying? Like a book where you're like, well, what did the author mean? Or when you're talking about a comic book fight about who would win, Superman or Goku, like how much, you know, you look that stuff up. And I like that you seem to provide part of that framing for people to enter into the art, to see the aesthetic and not just the consumerism. But again, because I know you also write, so you've seen kind of that educational space, and you're going to be a Word Lab seminar facilitator as well coming up. Word Labs, learn more about it. What do you think about it?
Well, you know, that's making me think of ostensibly what we're here to talk about is page to stage, right? Mm-hmm. The voicing of poems. And I work more on the page. In fact, sometimes I help people do the reverse, right? Where I'm mentoring poets who are spoken word poets, and like, how do you keep the life in the work when it's becoming a page-based thing? And I find often when I'm mentoring more emerging poets, I'm saying the opposite, actually, which, you know, so you've got me thinking about it, where I'm saying, okay, like, when you show me this poem and then tell me about it, I get a full picture and around it's beautiful, but it's not there in the poem. I needed your story. And for me, I mean, as much as possible, the art should do that work. And then, of course, I'm Googling those things too, and like, it is enriching to hear what happened around it, right? If I write an essay, I've got references that aren't just, this is what I cited, but similarly, like, maybe this is what I watched or listened to or thought of, but like, to me, I think it's because of the technology of the book that I work with. Like, you're alone with it. The writer isn't there. It has to do the work.
How much work do you expect of the reader, of the viewer? Like, what is their labor in interacting with the text?
So, fortunately, whatever happens between you and a piece of writing is what happens, right? It can be enough to just have one line resonate and that you walk away with, or you can decipher it word by word and be really, so that's, I'm not particular about like how much are people getting, you don't have to understand that. Like, if something's there for you, right? But yeah, within literature, that's a consideration of like some writers expect a lot of deciphering, right? It was Bloomsday the other day, like James Joyce makes you work rather hard. But I mean, I do think that like reading is a collaboration that way.
Yeah.
It's your mind meeting their mind and something is made
something
together,
which is
exciting.
So, and to that effect, and it was one of the questions that I was really interested in getting into, what happens where the meaning that you created, and again, let's say you put it in to make it clear and, you know, you're conveying it, and then when it hits the ears of multiple people, you know, what they each take away and then declare about the thing becomes very different. Because I remember, like, when I was young, early poem was about, I called it Liquid Love, Why Can't I Hold You Ever Falling Through Glass Fingers? It was meant to be about love and, you know, how elusive it was. A friend of mine read it and I said, oh, this is a great poem about alcoholism. I'm like, oh, the sound as you hit the floor. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, this works way. Yeah, that's what it was about originally. But I mean, again, love, alcoholism, you know, the way that those mesh. But that was an instance where it was like, oh, actually, I like this meaning that you're adding to the work. Versus if someone had said, oh, so this is about puddles and rivers. I'm like, no, go away. You're wrong. So how do you, I guess, navigate that? This idea of like people misinterpreting your work or your meaning.
These folks get to hear me all the time, so.
Oh. Well, this happens to me a lot because as a musician, you know, it's like people hear what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like as soon as you've created something and you put it out into the world, like I feel like I lose ownership of it completely, and it becomes whatever you want it to be, how you want to interface with it, mm-hmm. and you know, I have my opinion about what I decided to do. But I can't really control how you're going to engage with it, so it doesn't bother me.
I have a fun question.
Yeah.
Fun for me, I don't know if you'll find it fun, but again, you know, no one has to answer any questions that they don't want. You can pass, this is like on Jeopardy or any game show, you can pass, mm-hmm. but this isn't a game show, there is no prize for you at the end, but it's the prize of our company. But I agree with losing ownership, but does one lose stewardship of the art? And are those two different things, ownership versus stewardship? Because oftentimes, and this is, I've been shadow writing a few pieces getting ready to publish around like parenting and what parenting is it, you know, it's not an ownership, even though again, it's oftentimes framed that way. It's a stewardship, mm-hmm. but it's a collective stewardship. You know, it takes a village. We all have a level of stewardship over new life that enters. It's just that I like to frame it as parents are the immediate stewards of the child, of the, you know, new life. And so if as artists, we are the, let's say, immediate stewards of this, there can be wider stewardship. Does that stewardship continue after you've released it? And what might that look like if you think it continues? But again, this is me making a framework that is of interest to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like I would say, and I think maybe you'll agree with me, that I am a vessel.
Mm.
Right, and when these, I just put myself in the best position to get an idea, and I translate that idea as it comes through me. You know, and for me, getting into the best position for that is, you know, I try and be healthy. Mm. I drink a lot of water.
Was not drinking enough.
Do you drink smoothies?
So many fruit shakes in the morning. Yeah, I got.
I have a smoothie every morning.
Yeah. Say.
Same. I'm writing a book right now, and the smoothie is like putting in work.
Yeah. Turns out the body is a lot of it is water. Who knew?
Or it's like, or being active, or like forward motion, like running, like driving, even like that's when
you're
the
more
ideas
receptive. To
yeah, it feels like it's my antenna's up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just feel like the ideas just come through me, and it's like up to me to be in the position to catch them and translate them to the rest of the world. But then after it's come out, like it's just the weirdest thing because. You don't know what's going to happen to something once you put it out into the world. Like I have this one song about this hockey player, mm-hmm. Connor McDavid. I have a song about, and I'm originally from Edmonton. I was like, it has like other meaning for me. Like mm-hmm. it was like actually a bit of a metaphor, like about like my own career. But mm-hmm. it outwardly, no one would ever like clock that
until now,
right? But the interesting thing about this song is it really has been resonating a lot with young people, like children.
Mm-hmm.
And like schools in Edmonton have started, somebody sent me a video of like an entire school choir and like in band like mm-hmm. playing my song. And I was like, I did not make this for children at all. I was envisioning the guy like tailgating like outside of the game or whatever in the truck or whatever that. But then it ended up being like this other thing and I'm like, okay, that's great.
That's a really good point about how when you're channeling the universe and just experiences, you never know who it's going to resonate with. I wonder, have you ever had a moment where art you've made has resonated unexpectedly, audience-wise, or in a way that surprised you in terms of who was really kind of picking up on what you were putting down?
Sure. Like, yeah, I can't think of a specific example at this moment, but I know I've had instances where someone approaches me and I've learned to drop my assumptions over demographically. I might think we're not on, you know, we have nothing in common. Mm-hmm. And then they'll say something about what they read and how it, like, oh, I was mistaken. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing about art. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It bridges.
It does. Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. Part of the artistry that I do, I oftentimes say that it's more me going through my memory and storytelling and pulling together, like, whether it's gospel music, whether it's poetry, whether it's Caribbean style storytelling, just me trying to put you in my bedroom. Cool. Yes.
Yeah.
Have there ever been times where...
Who are you? Introduce yourself first. We're working on this.
Sorry. My name is Oliver. I'm an aspiring musician. But my question was, have there ever been times where the audience's response to a piece has changed the way that you look back at it in the future?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
100%.
Yes. Yes. There is... Do you mind if I...
Yeah, you go first, yeah.
So I grew up in Jamaican Pentecost, which was a very difficult experience as a queer, racialized person who was aware of colonialism and all the wildness of being in the Caribbean. And I wrote a poem about the ways in which, like, oftentimes in church when kids were being disobedient or chaotic, they'd get, like, slaps and, like, etc. So it was a poem about that, which, again, is a common thing across a lot of religious communities, this idea of children should be seen and not heard and not responding well to the fact that this is a developing nervous system. They're supposed to make noise and sounds and engage with the world around them. So I made a poem about it that was also meant to convey the complexity of the people doing the meeting as well, and the fact that it became like it's such a cultural thing. The choir singing while it's happening, the sermon going on, everybody kind of knows what's going on, but doesn't talk about it, but it affects relationships. Because again, it was specifically like a Black community environment. And then when I did it for a while in Canada, I didn't like how people vilified the people in the narrative or demonized them or kind of said, oh my God, it wasn't great that people went through this, but the focus on that without the appreciation of the greater, like, oh no, this is a story about humanity and the kind of mistakes that even you could be in a system like this. So I kind of shelved that poem for a while because I didn't like people thinking about those people in my life in that way. Yeah. And I didn't like being the progenitor of that thought. Yeah. So yes, their reaction did make me go back to it, and I'm looking forward to trying to tweak it so the message is maybe a little bit clearer in terms of the nuances. But
that's very interesting how it shifted meanings.
Yeah, especially as I've gotten older, and you know, my father passed away recently, and so I was in a Christian grieving ceremony, funeral, etc. And I was again reminded of that humanity piece. I'm like, ooh, I can't do this poem again until I've really reworked it, or at least packaged it in a way where it better conveys that complexity. Maybe people will still misinterpret, but then that misinterpretation will be more on them than on the fact that I didn't do my best to humanize in this narrative.
Interesting, yeah.
Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud next week for part two of From Page to Stage, Voicing Your Verse, featuring Cadence Weapon, Jay Marsh, and Siddiqui Demire. Here's Cadence Weapon with TLDR to wrap up this week's show.
Put their hooks in us, then they watch and let us dangle. Throw the book at you, a scandal. Throw my words up like a vandal. White walls in the gallery, stare like I'm part of the action. Lose your life over a caption, capsize. Now look who's the captain. Hard to tell who's real and who's capping. Capitalism in action. Camera flash, camouflage in the answers. Cars and mansions gone in a flash. Got you asking what happened. Karma coming right back because of your stances. I read too much, get stuck out of balance, just like a flying Walinda. Life like a beauty pageant. Mood enhancing beverage, too advanced. Performative compassion. Viral dances, better image capture on a search for perfect matches. Bad faith reading, but your fans got your back no matter what happens. They crowdfund scammers who are always claiming they're fighting the masters, lining their pockets, happening often, signing petitions, and constantly reaping the profits. Obnoxious, like cops who treat taxpayers like corporate sponsors. for commas, trauma farmers. Barter for my soul in bulk when I try to argue. Harder and harder to know what side of the wall I'm onto. My DMs filled with racists. To them, black death's a celebration, and black life is more of a provocation. Merchants of death masquerade as press. Got pound of flesh, they'll pay it. Live stream my grandma's wake, I wish I could have made it. Don't hate the game, I just hate the way they play it. Regurgitating disinformation, bench warmers trying to score points while remaining nameless, never citing sources, unbothered, staying faceless, tasteless tastemaker, never make a stand, clout chaser, cows to slaughter, always bragging about their brand, so remorseless, streaming apps use my catalog to leave me voiceless, posthumous release, only time I'll get promoted, couldn't find relief, I couldn't find my focus, did some therapy, finally got sober, all I want is peace and space to grow older with my family until it's all over. Remember when they used to call me roller coaster? Too long didn't read when I made this post. I ain't reading all that.